The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. We're lucky this week. Joining us is New York State Comptroller, bon vivant, man around town, Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you, Alan. I'm not sure I've earned those descriptions, but thank you.
Yes, you have in every way. Okay, so there are many things we can talk about this week, but I guess I want to talk a little bit about Andrew Cuomo and his obvious attempt, along with Jay Jacobs, the chairman of the Democratic Party, to get rid of, and I think really put a limit on, third-party activity in New York State. What do you think?
You know, I think in New York State we've benefited by having a diverse array of parties. Increasingly, many people do not want to affiliate as Republican or Democrat, don't want to affiliate with any party. So I think if you provide as many avenues as possible for political participation and political identification, the opportunity for there to be third parties that tend to, in New York, more often than not, revolve around certain ideological positions, you know, perhaps a little more narrowly focused, which is fine, and have the opportunity to influence the two major parties. We still are a two-party state, a two-party nation, but the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are bigger tents. So you look historically, you know, the role over many decades of the Conservative Party in terms of having an impact on the Republican Party. In more recent years, the Working Family Party's impact on the Democratic Party to influence final selections. I don't think that's bad. I think it provides for coalition building. And Alan, it's two questions. Number one, allowing third parties, minor parties, however you want to define it. So that gets to the question of what's the appropriate threshold. And the second issue is fusion voting, which, you know, as you know, and I'm sure most of your listeners know, is the opportunity for one of these third parties to cross-endorse folks in other parties, you know, typically someone in a major party. I think both of those are net positive for New York.
So you could vote for Andrew Cuomo, to exemplify what you're saying, on the Working Families Party if they endorse him. But what apparently ticked off, for want of a better word, Governor Cuomo was the fact that they endorsed his opponent in the Democratic primary. And that's why he's doing this. Now, does he have the right to do this, or does he need the legislature to make this happen?
Well, you know, in terms of reform and changes, you have a somewhat unique situation. As part of the earlier session, there was an agreement to set up a commission. We're familiar with that on other issues.
Sure.
That would have the power to enact a public financing program for elections, which has been a big issue in New York for a long time. Tacked on to that mandate, somewhat unexpectedly, I think, from many people's point of view, was also the opportunity to weigh in on the issue of these other parties and fusion voting. And that commission has to come up with recommendations by early December, which will have the force of law unless the legislature reconvenes and rejects those recommendations. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's being challenged in the courts. As you know, I think both the Conservatives and the Working Families Party are challenging it, and perhaps others are challenging it as to its legality. But and we know from, you know, the Pay Raise Commission, which I was a member of, there have been court cases that have thrown out, at least for now, some of those decisions. So we're kind of getting into some murky water here. My personal perspective, to narrow it down, I think the commission should focus on the clean elections, public financing, matching funds, incentivize small donations. I mean, that's really the reform that's been kicked around for a lot of years. To get into this other issue of eliminating the minor parties or raising the thresholds to such a high level that in effect you eliminate them, or are not allowing fusion voting. You know what? Let the legislature, you know, debate those issues. I think that makes more sense.
I do too. I remember Tom DiNapoli, my friend, at least until this program is over. I remember that once when you said you were for a public campaign financing, the governor said, okay, then we'll just start with you. That was very clever. Do you harbor any latent, at least, hostility as a result of his having done that?
Well, you know, I always try to be very zen. That's how I've survived
zen
in Albany, as
that's
long as
true.
I have. You know, I'm a Catholic zen, you know, with a fair amount of other influences. Look, you know, we're overdue to drive out the impact of large private donations. You know, I think you can give now, the limits are over 60,000, I think it's 63,000, something like that, to give to a controller race or a governor race. It's crazy. That's higher than the median family income for a family in New York. So you're right. We had said, let's have it start with the controller's office, the controller's race. The problem was they came up with this program at the not even the 11th hour, the 13th hour. We were three quarters of the way into the election cycle. The rules came even later than, you know, the initial authorization to set up the program. We would have had to return the money we had, start all over again, and I just felt it wasn't workable. I felt great regret that I wasn't able to participate. My opponent at the time, who's now State Senator Bob Antonacci, to his credit, he said, you know what? He was a new candidate. He was just starting. He said, I'm going to participate. But Alan, you remember what happened. He couldn't qualify because there wasn't enough time for him to gather what was required to meet the threshold. So Tom DiNapoli wanted to participate, felt closed out because of the way it was put together. Bob Antonacci, who wanted to participate, wasn't enough time for him to get done what he needed to get done. I probably would have had the same problem. So I felt it was a disingenuous effort, to say the least. And the legislature was part of that as well. We have to point that out. My fear always was that critics would say, see, it didn't work the one time we tried it in 2014, so we've already tried it once, we don't need to do it again. So I'm actually pleased that the governor and the legislature came up with the commission. I wish they would have instead just handled it, put in a bill, debate it, give the time for public input to the elected representatives in the Senate and Assembly to come up with a plan. It didn't happen that way, you know, so plan B is better than no plan at all. I'm very hopeful we'll finally have public financing for elections. It'll open the pathway for more people to run for office, more competition. It will remove the reality, at least the perception, that having a lot of money is a requirement for running for office. It shouldn't be that. Certainly the impact of pay to play also will be, I think, diminished. A lot of good reasons for the commission to do it. I think they're headed in that direction. But leave fusion voting alone. That's my plea.
Well, I certainly agree with your plea. Jay Jacobs is the chair of the Democratic Party, and he's the one who's carrying the water on some of these dubious suggestions. But let there be no mistake. He's doing Andrew Cuomo's bidding, isn't he?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Jay.
You know. Okay, all right, let's skip over that.
Hey, Alan, every now and then you want a brief answer, right?
So. Okay, so then there is this business of 50,000 votes versus 250,000 votes in order to get a permanent place or a place on the New York State ballot. So right now, you want to be, if you're the Democratic Party or the Conservative Party, you get 50,000 votes and you got an assured place on the ballot. However, the powers that be, Jay Jacobs or the guy pulling the marionette strings, Andrew Cuomo, have demanded 250,000 effectively will keep people off the ballot, perhaps even the Working Families Party, which is anathema. He really is out to get them, I believe.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know how accurate the press reports are about the threshold, but look, you know, what you're describing makes the point that's being a bit cute, right? That's saying you're keeping the opportunity for parties to qualify, but not really allowing it. Look, from my point of view, and you know, we've had some of these minor parties that have come and gone rather rapidly. 50,000 may be too low because the New York's population has grown. And I don't remember the last time we looked at that threshold. So the population, the number of people eligible to vote has grown, you know, in the millions, yet we've had that 50,000 threshold. So even this past election, you had the line that was headed by Stephanie Miner, I think got like 51,000 votes. And I don't know if that party is particularly active right now. You know, I don't think it's unreasonable to look at the threshold. But so, you know, you raise it 10,000, raise it 15,000. But to raise it five times, that's being too cute by half. I mean, that really is an attempt to eliminate the parties, and I don't think you should do that.
So let's go from there to another place. Let's go to your recent report on Wall Street, which you issued. And you issued this report. What did you find?
Well, you know, we do this every year because the reality is the securities industry in New York City, Wall Street, is a big contributor to the tax revenue for New York City, for New York State. Actually, for the state, it accounts for about 17% of tax collection. So that's a big, big part of our economy that drives the money that pays for health care and schools and everything else. So, you know, some people love Wall Street, some people hate it. The reality is we continue to rely on that that industry to generate economic activity for the rest of New York. What we found is that for the first half of the year, you saw really the best first half year profits reaching over $15 billion, best first half year in over a decade. That being said, as we've gone to the second half of the year, there, you know, some early signs of some softness, you know, in terms of the activity that we saw versus the first half of the year. We see the beginning of the year, they were hiring jobs. Now they seem to be downsizing, and actually we're projecting a net decrease in jobs on Wall Street by the end of this year. So, you know, remains to be seen what November and December will bring us. But Wall Street started off very, very strongly, and we do try to make the point that's good for everyone in New York. It doesn't mean that Wall Street should function in an unbridled way. I've been very supportive of the reforms that came in after the global financial crisis. I certainly don't agree with those that want to water down Dodd-Frank and some of the other protections. But, you know, we want New York to continue to be the capital for finance. And you know, you heard recently J.P. Morgan was talking about moving some of these jobs out.
Wait, he's still alive?
That's a problem.
Wait, he's still alive, J.P. Morgan?
Well, J.P. Morgan...
I know. It was bad humor. Okay, I'm sorry.
Because another little mention I should point out, Alan, although jobs in this industry are only about 5% of the workforce in the city, they contribute 20% of the wage and salary that's created in the city. So it has an outsized impact of those folks making money and spending it in the city and in the state.
So is Trump good for Wall Street?
You know, it's hard to tell. I mean, I think Obama doesn't get enough credit for what he did to save the financial system and keep it going. You know, there's no doubt that a lot of Wall Street is psychological as much as it is financial in terms of what drives the numbers. You know, I'd like to think that at the end of the day, while presidents certainly have an impact and the Fed has an impact, I'd like to think it's the resilience and the entrepreneurship of business and labor in our country that really ends up driving those numbers. So, you know, hey, when the market's up, I say it's good for everyone, and a lot of folks probably could take credit for that.
So Tom DiNapoli, is there a way to soak Wall Street for a little bit more money for New York State taxpayers?
Well, you know, they pay a lot already, and one of the big issues, you're hearing it come up in the national debate, certainly on the Democratic side, and one of the issues that we have in New York continues to be the negative fallout from the federal tax reforms, the cap on state and local tax deductibility, and the overall burden of taxation in New York. You know, I certainly think everybody should pay their fair share and the wealthier should pay more. I believe in progressive taxation. But we are a high tax state, and you do reach, for some folks, a tipping point, right? You hear a lot of anecdotal chatter, especially downstate, that in response to the cumulative tax burden and, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back, the federal tax changes, that more people on the higher income end are talking about changing their address, and many of them already have second homes and not so hard for them to do anymore. I don't know that we have the hard data in yet on that, but I do think we have to be mindful of that and tread carefully. And, especially as we head into next year's budget, where, I think we're going to have some challenges in the budget cycle. So, you can't always just tax your way out of some of the challenges that we're facing. And, in New York, as part of this year's budget agreement, they extended for a longer period of time the surcharge on higher-income New Yorkers with the state personal income tax. So there have already been steps taken for those that are making more to pay more.
Do you ever worry that the street might pick up and move to New Jersey?
Well, actually, Jersey has lost jobs even more so than New York in terms of this area. I think the competition is more down south.
Other parts of the country. What I mean,
Jersey is not viewed as when I talk to folks, Jersey's got a lot of budget problems and tax issues too. The competition is more, going to Texas, going to Florida, going to those places, and now of course with technology, everything's very mobile.
Yeah.
But I also think New York should be positioned to try to take advantage of dislocation coming out of Brexit. London is a competitor for us in terms of being a place for people in finance to work, and I think Brexit, if Boris Johnson gets his way, is going to have a very negative impact there. Hong Kong, another financial center with a lot of unrest in the streets. I'd like to think New York, perhaps, even if within the U.S. we're losing some jobs to other parts of our country, perhaps we could capture some of the good jobs that where there's uncertainty about staying in London or in Hong Kong.
I want to change subjects for a minute. Our very good friend, yours and mine, Senator Liz Krueger, she makes that point. She's your friend. Disagree about
Liz Krueger is one of the best state senators we've ever had in our state, and she is a good friend.
Yes, that's right. Now, she said you and she disagree on one thing, and that's this: divesting the state pension fund, which you are the sole trustee of, I should point out, from fossil fuel companies. You've always said that the bottom line is obviously you have to return a good rate of return for the taxpayers on the pension funds and for the pensioners. What do you got to say?
Well, let me distill it down to two simple messages on that. First of all, our pension fund has been recognized as a global leader in identifying the risks of climate change and how an institutional investor like the New York Common Retirement Fund can respond to that in terms of identifying the risk, engaging with companies to have them do a better job in reducing their carbon footprint and their greenhouse gas emissions. So we agree with those who say climate change is an existential risk that we have to deal with for the planet, for our public health, for investors as well. And we're taking a lot of steps. We had our decarbonization panel. In response to those recommendations, that group met for a year, recommended not to divest wholesale, but to have a more thoughtful approach in analyzing investments. So we now have a climate action plan, and we are implementing it. So we're ahead of other pension funds in dealing with the issue. The second message, I love the legislature. Legislature should not be micromanaging where the pension fund puts its money. That will be a recipe for disaster. We're one of the best-funded public pension plans in the country. We're always in the top number. We're number four out of the 50 states in how well-funded we are, 96% funded. That's because of the independence of the controller to manage those investments with fiduciary responsibility. The legislature would manage investments with a political agenda. That will be the death knell for us having a secure retirement system for our public workers. So however you feel about climate, and Liz and I are on the same page on that, legislature micromanaging the pension fund, recipe for disaster. It'd be a terrible precedent. Who knows what the next issue would be? And for our public workers and our taxpayers who support the system, that would be bad news.
You just said something that I think people may be shrugging about and scratching their heads. You said we're 96% funded.
Yep.
What does that mean?
So that's good. I'm glad you asked. So what that means is what are our long-term liabilities and what are our assets and how do we project forward? Do we have the assets to meet our liabilities? And the liabilities being the obligations to our retirees today and in the future. So, your goal is to get to as close to 100 as possible. We're at 96. We're number four out of the 50 states. Alan, put it in context. Only 8 out of the 50 states are funded over 90%. So when you read about Jersey or Illinois or Kentucky, really in crisis in terms of levels of pension fund, how well funded they are, as we say, Connecticut, even our sister plans in California, they're not as well funded as we are. Because we've had the right kind of fiscal discipline and managing the rates and smart investment strategy, we are virtually a fully funded public pension plan. We can guarantee the retirement security for our public workers.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, virtually doesn't mean 96%. It means 100%. Why are we at 100%?
Well, we're getting close to it. You know, we've been at 100. You know, part of our challenge, Alan, we're being a bit more conservative about the future. I've actually lowered just over the summer our assumed rate of return. Again, not to get too technical, but we are now at a 6.8% rate of return. When I started, we were at 8%. We're assuming a lower return environment because of some of the volatility in the markets. If you assume you're going to earn less money, it creates a challenge. So that has an impact on our funded status. But I think in the long run, you know, we are better positioning the fund in a more conservative way. And believe me, to be at 96%, there are 42 some odd states of the U.S. that would love to be where we are.
I believe you.
And we're in a really good place.
I believe you. Talk to me a little bit about pot. Let's assume that Governor Cuomo finally gets around to agreeing with the legislature and they make pot legal as they have in my fine state of Massachusetts, right across the border. And you can tell by all the New York State license plates that are over there lined up to buy pot. In my little town of Great Barrington, there doesn't seem to have been any ascendancy of, you know, bad driving or accidents or anything like that. So my question to you is, are we any closer the way you see it? I know he's met with some other governors. And how much money are we losing out on in New York?
Well, you know, obviously this is beyond the purview of our office, so we haven't been involved in negotiations. Let me say this in terms, the health department had a study and they came up with a number a couple of years ago. But let me say this as a concept. Whether you're talking about casinos or legalized marijuana, whatever the number that's out there is, my strong sense is that it's going to come in less than what people think. And if we're going to do a change on gaming, as we've done, or on legalized marijuana, I think it should be done on the merits of that issue and not as a revenue source. Same thing with sports gambling. I was at a meeting the other day and somebody said, well, if we're going to have sports gambling in New York, we should dedicate that to, you know, X cause. It was a worthy cause. I said, you know what? If we think funding for that program, whether it's education or mental health or whatever it is, if we think that's worthy, then we should fund it. Not tie it to these, what can we call them? Like a syntax, I guess, was the old way we used to call some of this stuff, right? Or, you know, call it for what it is. So I think, you know, New York perhaps taking a little slower on this is not necessarily a bad thing. I think there are issues you have to look at and weigh, you know, and I'll trust that the governor and legislature will end up in the right place on this. But, you know, you need to look at the whole picture. And I've said this before, don't approve it just because you think it's going to bring money in. That would be the wrong reason to do it.
Well, all I know is our little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 7,000 residents, just got handed a check from the local marijuana seller, as a tax on them, for $1 million. And that's for only the first 7 months. You know, that's money that's going wasting for New York. And you already talked about how some people, you know, may want to feel they want to go to Florida or other places in order to save some tax dollars. This would be a good way of raising some money.
Well, I look forward to being invited to a party at your home in Massachusetts.
You are always invited, Tom DiNapoli. It would be great. I'll tell all the neighbors that the controller is going to be there. Okay. So I guess, what about the costs of our early voting that we're doing in New York State right now? You can vote earlier. I'm not particularly happy with the whole program because you got to travel a little in some cases to get to the voting place.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, you know, is it expensive?
You know, I think we have to wait and see what the total cost is. From my point of view, it's well worth the cost. I think anything we can do to get more people to participate, the better. I think we're up to last I heard, so the numbers will increase as we get closer to election day, was over 100,000. I think the first day was something like, 50,000. For, unfortunately, what we call an off year, there are a lot of important local races. Yeah, that's a great number. It makes it, so much easier for people who, especially if last minute they didn't think to get an absentee ballot, to participate. So whatever the cost, it's worth it. And this year is dress rehearsal for next year, because next year, Alan, presidential year, I think you're going to have huge lines of people to do early voting.
Absolutely. And of course, Tom DiNapoli, good for the Democrats. But I have other questions to ask you, so I want to just move ahead without your answering that one. You know that there's been a big fight over the time. Governor Cuomo took some of your pre-auditing powers away, and then this year he said he was giving them back. Did you get them back?
Yeah, no, actually, we were able to come up with an agreement on implementation, and that is being taken care of as we speak. So we didn't get back every single thing, but, we got back enough to say we are now back in a much better place than we were, and I appreciated the governor's reaching out to me. He initiated the discussion for us to do this, and he was right to do it, and I think we were right to come up with an agreement with him. So that's good news for taxpayers.
Okay, we only got a minute. But somebody has come up with this idea of splitting New York into three places, maybe Long Island and downstate and upstate, three separate states, three separate governors. I think it's a rather inane idea, but I wondered about you.
No, that makes no sense at all. Each region of the state contributes a great deal, and we benefit from the diversity of New York State. And I have to say, as a non-New York City resident, the rest of us need New York City to be in our borders, because it still is the economic engine for the state. And so we need to keep it all together. Let's stick with the colonial map. That's just fine for me. And I think talk about splitting it up is interesting rhetoric, but it has no real viability.
Are you going to break out into song from Hamilton?
that would definitely clear the aisles if I did that. So we're not going to do that.
it's great to hear from our friend and my special friend, Tom DiNapoli, who I really think is doing a sensational job in his role. Tom DiNapoli, thanks so much for being with us, and I hope we'll see you in the future.
Thank you.